You are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
It was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Tuesday, June 22nd, 2021. Follow us on Twitter at ChickenXDinner, Instagram at ChickenDinnerSP, and smash the button so you get the podcast once it goes live. We will talk to Matoy Pearson, senior trader at WinBet. How do you make and move lines in the smaller markets? WNBA, FCS football. Mo's one of the only cats in Vegas that makes numbers on both, and he knows what it takes to move those markets. And it's not like in the NFL when you have 2 hours before kickoff, a team laying 5.5 or 6 points. Somebody walks up to the window, wants to lay $5,000 on the favorite. The line might not even move. If somebody wants to bet 500 or 1,000, though, on a WNBA total, that total can move 3 points. So we'll talk about what moves and what makes the madness of those smaller markets go. Interesting conversation with Mo. Also, is there anything worse than not being able to get scores? The answer for a lot of you is no. I know, it's hard. You're on a flight across the country and the Wi-Fi's out. Can't get 3G at your buddy's house. His Wi-Fi box is out. It's the worst when you can't get scores. And Mo was tracking, I think he had the LA Sparks last week. He's on a flight. He can't get the scores. Sucks. I wanted to start today's show with some Jacob deGrom insanity. And when you think about deGrom, you think of some sort of statistic this year. His ERA, 0.50. His whip, 0.51. 117 strikeouts to 10 walks. Paul Hembekidis from ESPN tweeted this out, at Paul Hembo. Pitchers as a whole are batting 112 this season, 0.112. The league is batting 0.113 against Jacob deGrom. Here's the craziest part about deGrom, though. The Mets are 9-3 when he starts, but he's only plus 1.9 units. Last seven, he's been perfect. The Mets are 7-0 in DeGrom's last seven, up 7 units. But DeGrom bettors got buried in April. 3 losses for a combined minus 7.15 units. DeGrom lost, well, I should say the Mets lost, not DeGrom. The Mets lost against Boston, minus 265. Against Miami, minus 265. At Philly, minus 185. He is doing everything in his power to make sure the Mets win when he starts, but when he loses, it's the most expensive loss, I would argue, in baseball. I guess you could throw Clayton Kershaw into the conversation as well. There have been games over the last 5 years, Kershaw, minus 300, minus 350, minus 400. But DeGrom is as good as it gets, and he should win the NL Cy Young, assuming he stays healthy, and he is a serious contender for NL MVP. Some books have him on the one line, others have him on the two. His ERA is 0.5, and his whip is 0.51. He's been the best player in baseball this year. But that's crazy that the Mets, 9-3 when he starts, but if you bet on DeGrom in every start, you're only up 1.9. Over the weekend, tough one. Not like we lost a lot of games. It was 1 loss on Saturday, 1 loss on Sunday, but both of them in overtime, and you could make the case that could have went 1-1, could have went 2-0, but you go 0-2. Nets money line, Saturday night, they melt in the final minutes of the fourth quarter. I think the Nets were up 6 with 2 minutes to go, and they lose in overtime. And the tough one is Montreal hockey. Oh, Sunday night. And I'm watching that first period. Robin Leonard was outstanding. He was all over the place. Played on his head. And that's the old narrative. Barry Rosner taught me this a long time ago when I was covering hockey in Chicago. When a team should be up 2 or 3 to nothing and it's tied 0-0, usually it only ends one way. Montreal was peppering Vegas in game four. But it's 0-0 after one. They go to overtime, and Vegas gets it done on the road to even the series. Tough one to swallow because we have the Habs also at plus 400 to win the series. If Montreal would have won on Sunday, they're up 3-1 in the series. And what's the series price then? If Montreal goes back to Vegas only needing one win, Montreal minus 250, 275. Now, of course, you look at the market and Vegas with two games at home, minus 325, minus 330, minus 350. The game five price is ridiculous. I'd love to take Montreal, but I'm a little bit jaded. You can get plus 205, plus 210 if you shop around. DraftKings has 210, South Point 210, William Hill 210, 100 wins you 210. I'm good. I've got Montreal to win the series. I hope they get it done. I hope they win tonight. I was hoping to get a better number on the puck line. They've even made that expensive. If you want to take the puck and a half, so you can tie pretty much after regulation, or you can lose by one. They lose by two, you lose the bet. So you get a goal and a half. I'm not laying 140, though, because Vegas could win 3-1, 3-0. I'm just going to cross my fingers and hope for Montreal to win. But that one stung much worse than the Nets, because the Nets is a one-off. Had them on the money line, they lose. That happens. But when you have a bet pending on Montreal series at 4-1, they're pretty much dominating the whole game, which we also had at plus 155, and then they lose in overtime. When the dog goes to overtime, it's not a bad bet. It's not. You hate the result, but I don't hate the bet. Ben Simmons stinks. How do I know this and Doc Rivers doesn't? I'm watching that game against Atlanta, game seven the other night. He clearly has no business on the floor. And I'm texting with my agent. I'm like, they need to take him off the floor because they are easier to guard in the fourth quarter. Embiid usually runs out of gas. And Simmons doesn't even shoot. Did you see the stat where in seven games of a playoff series, Ben Simmons took three shots in the fourth quarter? Made all three, 100%. 3 for 3. Playing scared is an understatement. What is he doing? He had a wide open dunk and he passed it. He's not even looking to shoot. He's a zero when he doesn't have the ball. It's actually pretty funny. I'm like, hey, watch Ben Simmons when he doesn't have the ball. He's just standing there. He's not moving. He's not cutting. He's not setting screens. So Atlanta's only guarding four guys. There was no business. And I even tweeted that out at SP Shoot. I'm like, if the Sixers put him on the floor, they'll lose. And now let's see what the coach does. And Doc Rivers stinks too. Have you seen the numbers on Rivers? ESPN stats and info on Doc Rivers in the postseason. Doc has 29 losses with a chance to clinch a playoff series. That is the most ever by a head coach in NBA history. So 29 times he's had another team on the ropes and lost that game. Speaking of stats that are not in favor of the Sixers, with a minimum of 70 attempts, Ben Simmons, 34.2 free throw percentage this postseason is the worst postseason in NBA history. 34% at the line. I also love, too, Doc with like 40 seconds to go. Sixers are down 4 or 5. He's like, all right, Simmons out. No shit. You should have done it 6 minutes ago. That combo is brutal. And I know some Sixers fans that were not too hot about having to play game seven. That's Philly sports in a nutshell. We're gonna gag. And they did. They were in control. But Rivers never makes adjustments, and he doesn't put his team in the best position to win. Put a shooter out there. Put a floor spacer out there. So then it makes you harder to guard. How do I know this? I host Chicken Dinner. Amazing. And then it plays out. No, you're just a Doc hater. No, I have no skin in Game 7. I don't have a series bet. If I'm Philadelphia, though, Ben Simmons is not on the floor in the final 5 minutes because he's a zero and he can't shoot. This is the NBA. It's not 1998. It's 2021. You need to be able to shoot. That's why Philly lost, because Simmons stinks and Rivers doesn't make adjustments. The NBA Final Four is wild. The Bucks, the Suns, the Clippers, the Hawks. What's that payout before the season?
Yeah, hi. I want to bet Milwaukee, Phoenix, LA Clippers, Atlanta to go to the Final Four.
You probably could have got like 500 to 1. Actually, probably higher. Plus 750, maybe? Before the postseason, Bucks 8 to 1 consensus, Suns 14 to 1, Clippers 6 to 1, Hawks 60 to 1. And now you look at it, your consensus price is the Bucks about plus 110, Suns plus 150, Clippers 7 to 1, Hawks about 10 or 11 to 1. I guess it's Milwaukee's to lose. Giannis played pretty good in Game 7. I'll give him credit. You know, I said I didn't think he was going to, but you tip your cap when a guy does that. Are they going to win 8 more games? I don't know. I don't have a horse in this race. I have none of these teams. I don't have futures on Milwaukee, Phoenix, LA, Hawks, none. I guess we'll enjoy the parity, but is the league ready for a Milwaukee-Atlanta NBA Finals? I don't know. Who's going to watch that? Very pumped, though, that we did get off the Trae Young train, and I made sure to tweet about this because, as you know, with a lot of these individual player prop markets, they don't go up until the day of the game. It's not like if a game is on Sunday, you get the props on Friday and Saturday. That happens in the NFL, which creates for a lot of chaos throughout the weekend. You know, an NFL player prop like Patrick Mahomes' passing yards, that could go up on Thursday or Friday, and the game isn't until Sunday. But in the NBA, these props go up day of the game. So I'm out and about on Sunday, and I see the Trae Young markets, and I'm like, oh, shit, they caught up. The books. They over-adjusted and over-corrected, which removes our betting value and removes our edge. And I tweeted that out. I'm like, look, we can't do any of this. They jacked up. Let's just go from Game 6 to Game 7. In one game, they moved his points from 27.5 to 30.5. They moved the juice on his three-pointers over 40 cents up. Minus 125 to minus 165. And the top scorer market, which he hit in 3, 4, 5, and 6. In Game 7, they had moved the top scorer prop. DraftKings went from plus 250 to plus 120. The edges were gone. It's too expensive now. What if Trae would have scored 28-29, hit two threes, and finished, you know, a point or two behind Embiid or whoever? That's a great game. But because the numbers were shifted and adjusted against us, that would have been 0 for 3 minus, let's see, minus 110, minus 100, and then minus 165. So you're losing 3-7 because the market caught up. You have to know when to get out. And we did on the Trae Young props. College football conference markets. I am so pissed at myself about missing Toledo. We talked about this when DraftKings put these markets up. I want to say it was April, late April-ish. Toledo was 7-1 to win the MAC. And I'm like, look out for Toledo this year. I like the coach a lot. I like their defense, their coordinator. They bring back a lot of starters. Toledo is moving, and we missed the move. Now, Toledo at DraftKings from 7-1... 7-2 now, plus 350. They whacked them in half. I do think there will be better numbers available in the future. Remember, DraftKings is the only market up right now. They're not up anywhere else, not in Vegas, not across the country, nowhere. Eventually, there will be some differentiation because some books will need other things. Buffalo is still the favorite. You'll see money on other teams in the MAC. I think Toledo, you might be able to find about 550 at some books. It all depends. I'm upset, though, that I didn't strike at 7-1. It might have even been 7.50. I can't remember the episode. but Toledo getting some serious respect and money in the MAC conference title market. A couple other teams that are interesting. Ohio State, to me, is cheap at minus 165. I know some of you don't like to play the favorite before the season starts. It's not a blind thing for me. I'm not going to play Alabama to win the national championship, but the math is in my favor on Ohio State to win the Big Ten. Ryan Day is as good of an in-game coach as Urban Meyer, and they still have the most talent in the conference. Penn State is 7-1, Wisconsin is 8-1. At those numbers, you're like, ah, I like Penn State. James Franklin? No. Wisconsin? They're good. They're not great. It'll take multiple injuries to derail Ohio State. I would argue Ohio State is cheap at minus 165 because I could argue they could be minus 250 or minus 300. That's really the only chalk that I like of the markets up at DraftKings, though. Clemson, minus 800 or minus 830 to win the ACC. A lot of pressure on DJ Wagalele. I'm not so sure. I'm definitely not laying 8 to win 1 either on Clemson. Defensively, they're loaded. They retool better than definitely any team in the ACC. I don't know who has a better job, the recruiting coordinator at Clemson or at Alabama. It's the same thing. Bring the recruit into the head coach's room, dump out the ring, show all the trophies. Oh, by the way, here's all the players we have in the NFL. Those are easy jobs. Clemson, though, DJU is not Trevor Lawrence. So if there's a team in the ACC that could get hot and could make things interesting and has a coach that knows how to win, to me, it's North Carolina. And you can find North Carolina at about 7-1. That's the DraftKings number, 7-1. Are they going to win it? Probably not. But at that number, I think I'm interested. And I love Iowa State in the Big 12. Oklahoma is going to be the favorite. That's the way things go. But you could find the Cyclones. Remember, Matt Campbell and Brock Purdy, head coach and quarterback, both came back because they want to play for a national championship. They want to get to the college football playoff. Those are the lofty goals and aims. I think they're talented enough to make it interesting. Not high on Texas. A lot to change there. A lot of moving pieces around Texas. To me, it's Oklahoma, Iowa State. I like the Cyclones, plus 225. And I saw this tweet from Brad Powers. Great college football mind. We're going to have him on probably middle or late August before the season starts. He's already fired a lot of his bets, but he goes inside of the details. Brad lives inside the details, and that's why he's successful at what he does. He found this major scheduling disadvantage, and this will make a lot of my Chicagoland listeners not very pleased. It involves Notre Dame. Six schools this year have a bye week prior to playing Notre Dame. Six. No other school faces more than three teams with extra time to prep. So six times this year, Notre Dame is going to face a team that has an extra week to prepare for them. That's a disadvantage. Over-under on the Irish at DraftKings, 8.5. And the under is the underdog. Over minus 15, under minus 105. Just saying. Two more things before we get to Mo. Local golf lines, and by local, I mean bookies. I had a couple buddies text me over the weekend their odds screen, their live betting odds at their local book. And these prices were dog shit. Twice as bad as the market. I had points bet up, and I had, I think, MGM up. John Rahm on Saturday afternoon, 4-1 plus 450. This guy's local had Rahm 2-1. A golfer would be 8-1 market, 4-1 with the local. 10-1 market, 5-1 with the local. If you've got a local, honor the local. That's fine. Play with the local because you're going to get an edge in different ways. But the locals, at times, have worse odds than what you can get in other places. I know people that are going to play with bookies the rest of their lives, and that's fine. But if the bookie's giving you 4-1 and the market's giving you 8-1 on a live golfer and you play golf every weekend, you are taking money out of your own pockets. Xander Schauffele, 16-1 market, local bookie, 8-1. There's no point. Well, I don't want to sign up for an account. Do you want more money? If you're betting 100 on the same golfer and he's 8-1 with your bookie and 16-1 with DraftKings or FanDuel or PointsBet, I don't understand the loss in connection here. You have to play the best number. And the locals might give you advantages. Some of them let you lay 108. Some of them let you lay 105 on sides in college and pro football or whatever. But they have to make their money in other places by cutting some of these other markets. Some of them don't even offer live. But if you're playing live, please, next time you're betting a big tournament in golf, look at what the local has and then just pull up a random app. It doesn't matter which one it is. And see which one offers you the fair price. Lastly, MGM has the World Series matchup odds. And they've had these up pretty much all year long. They constantly update them and repost them. The Red Sox markets, as you can imagine, very popular here in Boston. So let me just give you the gauntlet here. I'm going to go through all of the potential matchups for the Red Sox. Red Sox Arizona, 1,000-1. No thanks. Red Sox Atlanta, 150. Red Sox Cubs, 200-1. Red Sox Reds, 250. Red Sox Rockies, 1250. So plus 1250. Red Sox Dodgers, 25-1. Red Sox Marlins, 500. Red Sox Brewers, 125. Mets, 50. Phillies, 250. Pirates, 1250. Padres, 50. Giants, 100. Cardinals, 200. Nationals, 400. I think if you have a team or two that you like, this is interesting. This used to be the old five dimes bet. Nobody in the world had this but five dimes. They'd give you exact championship matchup. You could do it in the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, the MLB. Pick a team or two that you like and key them in with a couple matchups. So if you like Boston, look around the standings, look in the National League, and take a team like Boston, New York, 50-1. Boston, San Diego, 50-1. Boston Dodgers, 25-1. You split a unit in three, and you put 0.33 here, 0.33 there, 0.33 over here. Don't get crazy, but put a unit and split it. Chicago White Sox are a team that I'm keying. Hopefully they get healthy with the offense. Eloy Jimenez coming back soon. Luis Robert coming back soon. Pitching staff is great, but their offense has been depleted by injuries. If they're healthy, I think they're the best team in the American League. How about a White Sox-Dodgers World Series, 8-1. White Sox and Mets, 20-1. White Sox-Padres, also 20-1. White Sox Cardinals, 80-1. I'm just throwing numbers out. These are the prices. White Sox Reds, 100-1. White Sox Cubs, no, 80-1. These are things we couldn't do legally forever. And now we can. And there are a lot of you that are like, well, I missed the boat on the White Sox to win the World Series. They were 10-1, now they're 5-1, 6-1, whatever. Okay, well, key them in with a couple teams. Take the Padres and the Giants. Split a unit. You got options here. And if you miss the market on Chicago, you can still hit them in a different market and get better odds. Always, always shop around. Joining us on Chicken Dinner, you can follow our guy on Twitter at Heed These Takes. His name is Matoy Pearson. His friends call him Mo. You can call him Mo. He's a senior trader at WinBet, used to work at Circus Sports. If there's one guest that I need a shot and a cigarette for, it's you. Welcome to the show.
Oh, my man. It's a pleasure and an honor. I've been dodging you for like months on end.
You didn't want to do this show so bad that I had to email an executive at Win and ask for permission.
I actually got the phone call, I don't even know, maybe 2 weeks ago. to the extension of my phone that I have, incredibly. And when I answered it, I thought it was going to be about some type of, you know, work typical stuff. And the guy was like, are you familiar with chicken dinner? I almost hung the phone up immediately. I said, I can't have this. I mean, a couple of the other cats were in the room while I was talking about it. And the guy was just, you know, you were kind of hyping me up, saying like, this guy's this and that. And Alan would like you on the show. And I'm like, damn, that's fine. And you know, I'm just happy to be here now.
You have honestly declined to come on this show 4 or 5 times, and half of those times we were belly up on a bar somewhere. I had to go to the top. That's the juice we got over here, buddy. I had to literally email your boss's boss to get you here. And then I find out you go to Chicago. You don't tell me you're going to Chicago, but you put on Twitter, hey, where should I go in Chicago?
I'm like 42 drinks deep by that time. When I figured out that I was in, you know, your city, I was, you know, upset about that, obviously. And I couldn't text you because, you know, I knew you were hurt. But, you know, just as far as doing the show, I was just, I've been nervous. I've been telling you this whole time, I'm like, man, I don't know if I could do it. And you've been telling me, like, don't be an idiot, this and that. And it only took a call from the top, one of the top guys that went to get me on the show. Essentially, that was the deal.
I've got a tweet here about you being about 30,000 feet needing scores, which is the worst place in the world to be, especially when you get on the airplane and you think you're going to have Wi-Fi and the Wi-Fi is down on a college football Saturday. It's like, all right, yeah, I'm connecting twice. I'm going to fly from Boston to Cali, but I got scores the whole flight. And then they get on the speaker, psh, the Wi-Fi's down, and you're like, fuck, there's nothing worse than not being able to get the scores.
No, it's absolutely sick. I made a big mistake. Usually if I'm not watching a game prior, like I won't worry about it. I'll just be like, well, we're just going to hope it's not a loser when I, you know, look at my phone and we'll figure it out from there. But when I was in the terminal, I was with Lindy, you know, I'm telling him like, yeah, I got sparks right now, you know, and he's shaking his head, the regular deal. And, you know, as soon as we get into the plane, like I'm not tired at all. And as soon as we get up 30,000 feet or whatever, I did end up buying the Wi-Fi, which I don't usually do. And I watched that thing to the T, basically the whole second half. And I thought it was so funny. It was so fitting that it was a WNBA game, you know, crossing time zones or whatever, that I had to tweet about it. You know, I've been trying to mark it down. I've been doing this thing on Twitter where like I'm marking down times, almost like a personal diary, like on, I'm going to go back and figure out, cause they already have the times on it. I just think it's funnier when you put the time in there anyway, but yeah, there's like 40 people sleeping and I'm just like, I don't care. Like, I need this. I'm not screaming or anything. You know, I'm not obnoxious on a plane, but I'm definitely sweating pretty hard, man. But the sparks got there, which is incredible.
I wanted to give you this compliment. And full disclosure, you're one of the guys behind the counter that actually does make lines. A lot of guys behind the counter, they don't make lines. They manage risk. They move money. A lot of guys are very, very good at that, but they don't make lines. I don't know if there's anybody else in Vegas that if I throw out two random WNBA teams on a neutral or Nickel State and Bufu State, you have a number. How are you able to do this for WNBA and Division II college football so quickly? Because you're like a computer with those.
There's like plenty of ratings that you can just grab online, and obviously just following the games here and there and just kind of tracking, like, you know, where the lines are closing and stuff like that. I mean, it's just as simple as that. But, you know, understanding, you know, home and away, when I started making numbers for WNBA, it was in the bubble last year. And, you know, it was a little bit simpler once you kind of like followed and tracked like where the lines were closing and stuff like that to make your own power rankings. But in the bubble, there wasn't home in a way. So, I mean, I kind of almost gained confidence because I was like, all right, I think I could do this, along with making like college football lines from last year when COVID was heavy. Coming into the FCS spring, I almost just did it for fun. You know, when I followed a couple different rating systems, Stagger and a couple other joints. And I kind of like etched my own power ratings from there and then just followed it myself like the whole way through. So it wasn't really algorithm based. I just kind of, I made the lines with my heart, with my soul. You understand what I'm saying? My soul, I was making the lines with my soul and I got pretty decent at it, man. Really just focused and paying attention, just seeing how they're playing week in and week out and just kind of learning the players and stuff like that. It was a big deal. I was just happy that during the time when we were booking it at WynnBET, you know, we were doing pretty well to it. So, you know, that's just, you know, why I continue to do it. There was people I would be telling the games about, I'd be like, yeah, I got Morehead State plus eight against Valpo. And they're like, what is happening? It's like May. I don't understand, you know, how. And no one knew FCS football was going on, which is like almost a joy to do it just because, you know, I kind of had an edge on something that nobody knew what was going on, you know, until the playoffs, you know, later in the spring. But that's what made it more awesome. That's what made me more driven to do it.
Can you explain how quickly you have to move, though, in those markets? Because it's not like the NFL. When you're in the back at the screen and somebody wants to bet 5 or 10 dimes, it might move a half a point. It might not move at all if it's near a key number. But if somebody taps into the account and drops even, I would guess, a nickel or a dime on the WNBA, you guys got to move it and move it fast.
Yeah, no, I mean, world openers now for WNBA lines. We're not giving out, you know, ridiculous limits overnight. It's only 300. But, you know, if anybody's betting an overnight WNBA line for 300, you know, I treat that almost like a $5,000 bet. No one's looking to bet WNBA. So, you know, usually we're moving something like that, you know, a point and a half, 2 points, and respecting it. This, especially with FCS, you know, those lines come out early. They're soft. And if you're brave enough to put out totals for something like that, you know, any of those totals can move, you know, 3 to 4 points just from day to day. I think the craziest stuff I've seen on FCS was the day of, you know, where a lot of people probably didn't want to give out their info and, you know, maybe they were moving a line to where they wanted it to be. And then when they got down, man, like markets were getting smoked all day, like in the morning. You know, you get there about 5, 6 in the morning Pacific time. It was just an absolute tragedy. You know, you're holding your breath, changing a bunch of these lines with teams you never even really heard of, which wasn't the case for me. But, you know, that's how it is. I mean, even a $500 bet on a total could move like 3 points, you know, so. All of that stuff's pretty delicate just because of the markets.
The FCS is the only sport where I could literally beat the market by 8 points and still get smoked.
I think like the first 3 or 4 weeks, a lot of the sharper info that was getting there that was crushing the market by 7 to 10 points was just getting annihilated bad. Some of them were getting there, but a lot of those guys that had the info, you know, they just weren't winning early, which I was almost like quick to think like, man, are these numbers bad? Are they wrong? You know, it was just kind of holding my breath, kind of getting through it, trying to trust my power rankings. And somehow, you know, it ended up pretty well. But yeah, man, it was a nightmare for some of the guys that were paying attention to it.
You know this. There's a difference between information bets and just betting. You know, if I have information on a team or a player or something's going on here, that's different than me just looking at the board and saying, ah, I like this team. There's a difference.
Yeah.
You guys had to book differently than you've ever booked before. And you know some of the tips I got, namely the Ohio State Northwestern one, when the line moved from 20.5 down to 16.5 and then it closed about 18. You guys almost got middled because the game almost landed 18. Those information-based moves this year off the COVID stuff and off the last minute stuff. Like I'd get something on Thursday and it wouldn't get slammed until Saturday. How different was it behind the counter this year when you guys are not only tracking money, you're tracking information that is backing the money?
You know, it's from sources like yourself and plenty of other cats that we know, you know, in the industry or anybody that just, we know that's doing it professionally. It's tougher because you want to rely on the source. And, you know, when you move a line and you go off market, obviously, like anybody that has a screen that's board cleaning is going to unload as much as they can, you know, not even, you know, figuring if it's info or not, you know, it's just off and they can get off a bet like that, you know, considering whatever situation it may be. But, you know, kind of trusting yourself and, you know, maybe you can go to a number, take a little bit, you know, at one number, maybe move a half. And then when you get back to the market, you'll know, like when that move does come, you can move immediately to like wherever you were taking your money to begin with, as far as from a booking standpoint. So I think it was just kind of trusting the info and, you know, just just being aware of like what's happening. Cause like if the info is not as good, you know, we're going to have to book it, you know, in some other way. So, I mean, it's tough to figure how it works. It's almost like a give and take with like the customer. And then you kind of trusting yourself, taking money at certain spots before the move does actually come.
At the end of the day, though, the customer is still laying 11 to win 10, so the house has the edge. But I've had several conversations over the last 6 months about moving these markets. When the COVID tip would come out, this thing would move. Like, I think one of my other big examples this year, oh, we got Michigan against Wisconsin. Hey, Michigan's going to be down two linemen, two defensive ends, the receiver, and one other important player. You get the tip and you see the screen move because Michigan was minus one on Friday afternoon. Saturday morning, it's 2, 2.5. By kickoff, it's almost 7. There's no playbook for that, Mo. You guys have never been in that spot before. And then you're moving based on the money, but the money is being bet on a tip that can't be confirmed. And then when it is confirmed, it goes up even more. You're playing for keeps, but it's not a fair shake.
It's like some of the – it was so, like, jagged during the season because, like, some of the COVID stuff was like a mortal loser. Even if the line did move and, like, 20 players that may never, like, get in at all, like, might have COVID, and it didn't matter to the line. You know, there, I think there was, like, a South Carolina game. Maybe it was Utah. It was one of the games earlier in the year where, like, I think a total or a line moved, like, maybe 7 to 10 points. And I remember, like, that side that was favored lost the game outright. Man, Jeff Davis would know this. I remember just me and him chopping it up about it. I was like, well, I didn't play it, but I laughed at it when I seen the score. But yeah, no, as far as from the booking standpoint, it's just, like I said, man, kind of hold your breath. It wasn't anything that we could take care of. I mean, we were booking the best we could. You know, we were just hoping we weren't going to get fired, you know, explaining that the quarterback was, you know, had some type of COVID that morning or whatever tip we got. It was, you know, worse than we expected. And, you know, we get smoked, you know, for 10 dimes or so on a certain game, you know, something like that. Well, it was worse when it wasn't like a – it was more of a group of five team. Because sometimes you're not going to get action on a Georgia State if you're getting info like on a Sun Belt game. So if like you get smoked on Georgia State's playing like Lafayette and Lafayette has like 30 players out and we take like 20 dimes on Georgia State, it's going to be tough to get any of that money back because no one even knows that game exists. So we're just like, well, goddamn, like this is it. Like this is what we got going on. We have to pray back here and figure out, you know, what's going to happen during the game.
Oh, for me, the consumer, I hope it happens every year. But for the bookmaker, I do sort of feel bad. It's like, hey, the entire backfield at Buffalo is out. Now what do we do? You know, like, do we move it from minus 14 to minus 6? Do we move it to 8? You don't know what you're doing. And nobody does. And you don't even have to comment on that because I don't want to get you in trouble. I am kicking myself.
I don't know anything about anything.
I am so mad at myself because I didn't fire Toledo at 7-1 to win the MAC about a month and a half ago. I was staring at the screen when DraftKings put the markets up. They had Buffalo plus 150 or something. I don't know, maybe they didn't realize their coach left for Kansas and their entire offense is mostly gone at the skill positions.
Yeah, dead and gone.
Oh, they had a bad line on Buffalo, and they had Toledo 7-1. I just pulled up DraftKings, only book right now that has this market up. Toledo 7-2 now.
Jesus Christ. Cut it right in half. You a big Jason Candle guy?
I like Candle. I think their defense, though, last year, weren't they top 5 in third down defense, and they bring back 10 starters?
Yeah, they were awesome. I think they bring back essentially the, like anybody that started last year, maybe 20 starters. But they're going to have a strong running game, which I think kind of piloted the offense, you know, where they dominated most of the games when they had a good rushing attack. And, you know, their defense is going to be legit. But it's been a long time since Toledo's kind of been on top, man. So 7-1 would have been healthy had you grabbed it, for God's sakes.
What do you got? I know you got something. I know you've done your homework. Who'd you do already? The Mac, the Mountain, who else?
No, I haven't done anything or bet anything yet as far as conference.
You're a fucking liar.
No, I promise you. The only team I've been looking at right now is Fresno State, who I was pretty high on last year, you know, with DeBoer as the head coach. He's one of a offensive genius. It was just tough to kind of get things going for Fresno State because of, you know, timing with the offense on how he runs it. And Jake Haener came in from Washington and now he's the starting quarterback and he's got a year under his belt with the Bulldogs now. But in the Mountain West, it's so stacked on the Mountain side. It's Boise State, Nevada, Wyoming. These teams are going to be legit. Boise State's going to come back, and I think they're favored right now to win the Mountain West. But Fresno State out of the West, it's almost a toss-up. San Diego State looks like they might have a down year with a tough offense. You know, UNLV is just going to be as good as they are. I'm hoping they get two wins. You know, that's just a personal thing being in Vegas. But Fresno State, their win total right now is 6, and I would lean over. Didn't seem like they cared much late in the year, and that seemed right. It was fair. They didn't really have a good start to the season, but with the talent that's coming back on offense, and you know, plenty of players coming back on defense, this is a team that I think could be in the championship in the Mountain West next year.
22-1 right now in Fresno State. So here's the market, only at DraftKings, and I think eventually you'll see this at more places around the country. Boise State, -110. Nevada, -450. San Jose State, -5. Wyoming, -7. Hawaii, -10. San Diego State, -14. Fresno, -22. You're saying they are mispriced as the 7th best team, yes?
I would assume, yeah. In the West, it's not going to be a toss-up, but this team's going to be much better than they were last year. I can guarantee that. 22-1 seems like a great shot, a team that I think is going to be in the actual championship.
How tough is it for a lot of shops to look at a conference like the Sun Belt, Conference USA, the American Conference? Well, American is a little different because you got Cincinnati, but conferences like that, conferences that don't move the meter as far as national championship contenders go. Because from my perception, most of the books, when they throw these markets up, they're relying more on the results from last year than they are for the team heading into the coming year. Am I onto something here?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I think in the shops that I've been at, the people that I've worked with have been pretty legit on a lot of these smaller conferences. So, you know, just kind of going back, everybody has a pretty good memory of these teams and these coaches. And then just kind of getting, you know, the magazines for the year, reading up on stuff. You know, the portal's been a big deal now. So I think we have a good enough staff of guys that I've worked with where we're at least accounting for more of these teams either having a regression or, you know, a team that just kind of had some rough games, some close games, and we're going to be better the next year. So I think the people that I've worked with had a better understanding, even about the smaller conferences, on which teams can actually succeed and regress. Or we just flip a coin usually, but either way, so that's what it comes down to.
I only have a couple more things I want to get to, including the time we first met.
That's fair.
Somebody wanted me to ask you about Scarfish.
What do you want to know? What's the first thing we want to know?
Everything. Don't skimp on any details.
Me and Alan Berg, man, my top dog, he's the director at WynnBET right now. That's my guy right there.
Careful.
We were at Caesars, it's fine. We're okay. We're all right. We would always go to this game called Fortune Cup, and you could bet on horses. They're like plastic horses that they're in this like little orb looking thing, like a globe deal. And you could bet on these horses like running around. There is no handicapping to it. It's all luck. It's essentially a slot machine with horses. So, you know, we would, you know, we'd go out, have a good time, and end up, you know, throwing like, you know, a couple bucks in the machine. We're like, all right, well, let's get the horses going. Obviously, you know, we're drinking, we're having a good time. So I'm getting loud, man. I get loud at these machines. I'm cheering for the three. I don't know anything about the three. People are looking at me weird. I'm just like, no, I'm having a good time. Anyway, the night goes on. They have names for these horses, Money Blast, or, you know, assorted ridiculous amount, you know, names for horses. And Scarfish comes up. I said, this is the one, dog. This is the one. You know, so we were betting Scarfish mad times. Anytime his name popped up and we were winning big, the guy would be like 5-1, 7-1, and screaming in Scarfish would be insane. The funny part is Fortune Cup is like at all these spots in the city. So, you know, like, all the names are the same. So anytime we'll pull up at any other place and Scarfish would come up, we'd be like, no, there's no way, we got to bet it. So, man, it was I'm going to get Scarfish tatted, I think is what I told him one night. I don't know if I'm going to follow through with that. That's where I put Scarfish in my life.
My favorite part about hanging out with Berg, I remember one night we were over at the Long Bar and you look at me, I look at you. I know you want to ask something. You look a little perplexed. You go, I can't find Alan. And I said, -800, he's at the Simpsons poker machine. And he was there. I was short by a dime.
Man, I'm trying to put that into, because I'm sure that happened. But at the time, like whatever was going on, I already knew it was going to be right no matter what. It was a lock. I couldn't lay the price, though. We just had to go walk to see him.
He was two elbows up on Simpsons poker.
He probably was crushing.
He said it's the most EV machine in Vegas, the Simpsons machine at the D.
Plus, the best thing is he was probably trying to get away from us. I would mark that down as a lock, if anything. He said, I can't be around these jokers.
I got one more thing, and then I'm going to let you go. You're off the hot seat after this one. Do you remember the night we first met?
Oh, man. Dude, I was running late. It was probably like 8 or 9 Pacific. I was running late to the bar. You guys were at the D. Everyone was there. I think, maybe Halloween, somewhere around there. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe something after that. But, I'm trying to get out of work. And Alan calls me. He's like, where are you at, dude? What's going on? I'm like, dude, shut up, man. I'm trying to get out of work, this and that. We're having the same type of feud, laughing about it. He's like, all right, I got your drink when you get here. I was like, all right, no doubt. So I leave like 30 minutes later. I'm trying to like run through downtown. It's like an absolute chaos is going on, obviously. So I'm like later than what I'm supposed to be. Sorry, I'm dying. And I get to the bar. And Alan's there. He's like, man, where you been, man? I've had your drink for this, this, and this. I'm like, yeah, man, let me get that. And it's this stupid watered down, like a Crown on the Rocks, like double Crown, my usual. And stupid watered down. And I'm like, what is this? He was like, well, it melted. The ice melted. I'm like, well, that's dumb. So I'm not even seeing you. I don't know who you are. You're just another man in the D. I'm like, hey, my man, can I get like two more ice cubes to put in here? Is that cool? And he's like, yeah. So he puts these cubes in. You're like, oh, those are some nice ice cubes. I'm like, oh, word, nice. Like, whatever, cool. And you're like, are you going to put an umbrella in that as well? I said, who the hell is this guy? Who is this motherfucker? Dude, he's like, bro, that's Sammy. That's Sammy P. So I'm like, oh, shit. And then you started crushing me because I wasn't following you on Twitter. Then I felt bad. You have a knack for making me feel bad. We got to get that checked out. I was like, damn, but you crushed me for the umbrella. I'm like, I don't even know this dude. Who is this man? And I'm bugging out about it for that second, man. But, everybody was just the D, like the long bar was out of control that night. I don't know if you remember, dude, that thing was insane. And I got there late too. So everybody was like already way ahead. I'm going to do my best trying to catch up. But yeah, between the Twitter and the umbrella, I'm like, this is the guy that I'll be locked in with forever. I already knew.
You said you knew at that point we'd be boys for life. The Twitter thing was a little harsh. That was unnecessary. I just wish, honest to God, I wish we could explain properly what the long bar was like pre-COVID and pre-Circa. Because there was no Circa back in the day. It was long bar was the joint. And pre-COVID, whew, that place was the Wild West.
Just that night alone. The first 2 weeks prior to that was just chaotic, but that one night I remember just looking around the bar like, this is insanity. It's like 10 o'clock. Like, I'm just like, dude, I think I ended up leaving around one to some other joint, but the long bar was Jesus Christ, man. I knew from then when I was at Circa at that time when we were at the long bar, I was like, this is out of control. It's absolutely insane.
Oh, I'm getting the hangover just thinking about it. Please follow Matoy Pearson at Heed These Takes. He's over at the WinBet team. Great staff led by Alan Berg behind the counter. I'm coming back in August. Get the cheese fries ready. I am so glad that we got you on the show. Now you got to come back, though. Once you come on once, you got to come back.
I'm already knowing. We'll be at the trash can. We'll negotiate again if I'm ever coming back.
I appreciate you.
I'll be back, man. I appreciate it, man. Thanks, man.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Mo Pearson for hopping on. I could have done another half an hour with that cat. And I think it's so funny that he was so good, even though he's been dodging the show for over a year. Amazing guest. Amazing. We got one in the hopper. We got Canadian Series pending at 4-1. Record check 1-4-3, 1-4-1, and 5, down 8. But if Montreal wins the series, down 4. Feeling pretty good. Eventually, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to take, hopefully, the month of August off from firing picks on Chicken Dinner. We shall see. It's been a grind since last August. Been up and down, been up and down. The way it goes. And I wanted Montreal tonight, but I don't know. At 210, I think there's good value, but good value doesn't mean it's going to win. Vegas is a tough place to play. They're feeling themselves. They got the momentum. I'm going to root Montreal, but going to sit out on the sidelines. Let's go Habs. Get it through. We'll talk to you Thursday right here on Chicken Dinner. Cash some tickets, make some money. We'll see you soon.
So you